was a person who had, as reflected through his poetry, he had a very, very strong interest in philosophy, and especially in the philosophy of Plato, which set him apart from the other Jewish philosophers of the times. I explained to you last time that we really have no relevance, very hard for us to have any relationship to this type of philosophy. We don't worry about such things. I doubt if in the Western world today there are very many people who care whether Aristotle is right or Plato is right, who care anything about it. It's just not our bag any longer. But in the medieval world, philosophy occupied in a very, very central role in the thought processes of man and in the advancement of civilization and in religion. And as I explained to you last week, Averroes Ibn Rashid took the Muslim religion and made it conform to Aristotelian philosophic principles, and Thomas Aquinas took Christianity and made it conform to Aristotelian principles. And Lahavdil, as we'll discuss next time, that the Rambam did the same for Judaism in the Moreh Nevuchim. But among the Jews, Aristotle never was quite as popular as he was among the non-Jews. And therefore, Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, in his philosophy, ignored Aristotle, had non-Aristotelian philosophy. We're going to see that Rabbi Yehuda Alevi in his Kuzari is also non-Aristotelian. And Rabbeinu Shlomo Ibn Gabirol also was non-Aristotelian, but he was what in philosophy is called Neoplatonic, New Plato, in which he took the ideas of Plato, which really is Socrates, and he applied them to Jewish theology, let us say. He wrote a famous book in Hebrew called Makor Chaim, the source of life, which was translated into Latin. In Latin it's called Fons, F-O-N-S, Vitae, V-I-T-A-E, meaning again the source of life. It was a tremendous hit among the non-Jews, and the Jews just ignored it. In fact, Ibn Gabirol in the Middle Ages was much more popular, if that word can be used, among the non-Jews than he was among the Jews. And it was also translated into Arabic. And the principles of Plato, the philosophy that he laid down in that book, caused a great deal of controversy. And we have a great many church writings to dispute the book, to support it, to quote it, to deal with it. It made an enormous impression in its time. Today it is consigned almost universally to the dustbin of history, because again, it's not relevant to Western man. But for almost 400 years, till the time of the Reformation, the beginning of the Reformation, till the time when Christianity would break into a number of sections, it was a very, very important work in medieval Europe. What he is remembered for amongst us, among the Jews, is for his poetry, his religious poetry. Now, there is one particular poem. The poem is called Keser Malchus. Keser Malchus, the crown of sovereignty. That poem is recited among Sephardic Jews till today, of Yom Kippur night. The Ashkenazim say Tefillah Zakah or some other type of penitential prayer. The Sephardim read the entire poem. The poem is about 90 pages long. The poem has a few hundred stanzas to it. But the poem is a magnificent description of God and man and of the people of Israel and of the Torah. And the poem, aside from being tremendous poetry, is also